This.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
But I'll probably hate it.
All right, Patriots tickets coming to you in the next 25, 30 minutes, so stay tuned for that. We'll take your calls on whatever you want. You can still call us on football, but a couple baseball things here. Maz, what are you hearing and sensing on the Chris Sale news the last couple days in terms of his side sessions?
So I mentioned this last night on the Baseball Reporters because Murray said this yesterday in some of his headlines, and as the day went on, it occurred to me last night that yesterday Sale was supposed to throw a side day. And in fact, I was reading again this morning, and Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal, obviously Greg Bedard's site, wrote that the original plan was for Sale to throw, quote-unquote, an aggressive bullpen on Monday. And during Murray's headlines yesterday, he said Sale threw at Fenway Park, and this is according to a tweet by Evan Drellick of NBC Sports, that Sale, quote-unquote, threw on flat ground. And I heard flat ground, and my antenna went up. And again, this is just me, okay? So I want to make this part clear.
No. I felt the same thing. Flat ground.
So I don't have... there wasn't anybody who whispered in my ear or anything of the like, but I heard flat ground and I said, well, that's unusual. You know, especially for a guy who's not going to have pitched in 8 days or whatever the hell, 10 days going into the playoffs. Flat ground is what you do when you're coming back from an injury. Flat ground is just a game of catch out in the yard. That's it. You're just out there having throwing the ball back and forth.
No, it's a rehab workout.
I mean, typically when a guy comes off an injury in camp, he will throw on flat ground and they will extend the distance
right
as he gets a little bit stronger and stronger, and they resist putting him on a mound. And the fact that Sale wasn't on a mound yesterday, I find that curious. That's all. Now, look, they've said today, Murray, right? There's an update.
An indoor bullpen session.
Correct.
So he's going to throw off the plastic thing inside in that little runway tunnel there?
So I find that a little weird, too. Like,
is it raining out
no,
there?
No, it is. It was raining when I came in. But even so, like, the whole thing feels clandestine to me. Like, all of a sudden, they're hiding it. And I don't know why. So, again, he's supposed to throw yesterday. He didn't. It was flat ground. And now that he's indoors, and I know it's raining out. I get that. But even so, I look at him, well, that's odd. So I just wonder what's going on with Sale there that we don't know about. And maybe there's a more significant injury. And, you know, Dombrowski made a reference to in something he said to Johnny Miller. And Jimmy, the cut isn't worth pulling. But when Johnny Miller interviewed Dombrowski over the weekend, he asked him about the shoulder. And Dombrowski talked about the bursa. Okay, now it's the first time I've heard anybody mention specifically
bursasac.
What the area of the shoulder is causing the inflammation, but that is between the rotator cuff and some other areas in the shoulder. There's the bursa in there, which is where the inflammation is. And I immediately hear bursa and I say, it's a cuff problem. So again, maybe I'm putting things together in my typical paranoid sense, but he didn't throw off a mound. Dombrowski mentions the bursa. Now he's indoors. Like, all of it feels to me like they're hiding something, and there's more to this story than we know.
Okay, so to me, the one that just thought was flat ground. Like, usually, I mean, it was supposed to be the ramp-up, right? So instead of him pitching an extra turn, he was going to have an aggressive sort of simulated game or something,
correct,
right, on Sunday, Monday to set him up on regular 4 days for the Friday opener. All right, except it's a flat ground session. You that as like as your first couple workouts back from an injury. So I don't feel good about the Sale thing. All right, that's item number one. You can weigh in on that. Number two, Yankees tomorrow night host the A's in that play-in game. Fascinating on both sides. Yanks are going with Severino, which you think is telling Maz and not the right call, and the A's are going bullpen.
Isn't that unbelievable?
So this, when this started this year, we thought it was sort of like a throwaway maneuver for bad teams because they don't have full rotation. Like the Rays started like their third game of the year against you with the bullpen game.
Correct.
And we're like, that's a sign that they're tanking and they don't have enough starters, so you go bullpen game. And it's just a joke. No, this is now a legit tactic. The Brewers did this in one of their last games of the regular season.
This is an elimination game.
They needed to clinch the division. They did that. They almost did it yesterday, the Brewers. They were considering going bullpen yesterday in the tiebreaker game. And now you have an elimination game, and the A's are going bullpen. So, Severino versus bullpen.
Okay, so I don't like the Severino thing at all.
Why?
I think the Yankees are making a bad choice there. Because A, he didn't pitch well in the postseason last year. And then B, on top of it, there are other guys who threw better for them during the month of September.
Hap's been their best pitcher for a while now. And them going to Severino and thinking that Hap, like going, what I think they're doing is they're thinking of Boston already.
That's what Chauncey said today. He said they are, the Yankees, by doing this, are so cocky that they're going to win this game, that they want to save Hap for game one and have a fully rested Hap for two goes against you and the DS.
Yes, I mean, and that, I think that's a factor too. Hap's ERA in the month of September was 1.88. He pitched well for the Yankees the whole time. Tanaka's ERA has been good for a while now. He's building the ball well, 2.79. Now, Severino in the last couple has been better, so his ERA in September was 3.98. But, and that's the whole month. The last couple of starts was better, and as Jimmy pointed out before the show today, Jimmy Stewart, our producer, Jimmy said that Severino has good numbers at Yankee Stadium. I get all of that. The Yankees are in New York. They have a good lefty in their rotation that they picked up at the trade deadline that they've won just about every time he's gone out. And they're going to throw a right-handed pitcher at Yankee Stadium and introduce the right field seats? Like, you're going to spin Jed Lowry around to the left side. And you're going to let Jed Lowry hit into the right field seats at Yankee Stadium? To me, it's asking for trouble. Like, I just think Severino's not the guy I would have gone with. I'd have gone with Hap or Tanaka. Either one I can understand.
Okay.
Severino, I don't get. And the bullpen thing with Oakland, it might be the right move because of the shape of their rotation.
Fascinating.
But it is fascinating. It is. It's unprecedented.
And it's, I don't think that's a good trend in the game.
I don't either. I don't like it.
It's really overmanaging. It's just you're asking for longer games, more teams to copy, more teams to follow suit. If you don't have five legit starters, do you go bullpen every fifth day in the regular season? And, like, maybe that's hard to do with 25-man rosters, but I don't know. Tampa seemed to do it. Tampa did it for most of the year, didn't they? So is that a positive trend for baseball or not? But at least for this game, in the one-off, it will be fascinating because it is a one-off, and that leads me to the third item baseball-wise, the format. Now the beauty of the baseball format kicks in. These next two nights in Major League Baseball are my favorite two nights of the entire year. The favorite two nights of the entire year until we get to some true elimination games, some game sevens, some game fives, then, you know, obviously those are going to be up there too. But these one-off playoff games, I love, I love, I love. I love the urgency of the night. I love the one-off elimination nature of it. I love that it pisses off the baseball people. Well, you play 162. It's not fair that you only get to play one. I don't care about that it's fair. I'm not worried about fair. I'm worried about the consumer. I'm worried about me. And for the consumer, this is amazing. I don't care if it's fair to the players or the people in the game. Frankly, those people can go screw because they've ground the game to a halt. They've turned it into an unwatchable morass for much of the season. So you've lost your privileges. I don't care what's fair for you.
Oh, can you imagine the whining from Yankees fans tomorrow night if they lose to the A's?
100 wins, man!
In one game. Yeah, stop
dropping games to the Orioles
exactly.
Throughout the season.
Stop sucking.
I'll tell you what, I'm more worried about the Yankees now than ever for two reasons. One, I feel like they picked the wrong guy. And this bullpen thing, if I'm the Yankees, that would scare me. Like, every time I go to the mound, every time I go to the batter's box, rather, there's a different guy in the mound. And, you know, you have an organization in the A's that loves to sort of just jerk around people with the numbers. Like, you know, now look, Oakland's got its history of choking too. But some of the Yankee guys in that Yankees lineup, like Stanton, if you pitch them right, you can get them out. And now you can match up with them. I feel better about Oakland today than I did yesterday.
Of the two, who has more pressure on them in that game tomorrow going into it?
Yankees.
Of course.
Oh, not even close.
The expectations for them this year were to win the World Series after they nearly got there last year. You know, 100 wins, that lineup. If the A's are playing with house money, nobody expects them to go in there in that game tomorrow night.
Okay, so here's the beauty of the format, though. Tonight's when the format gets good. Those tiebreaker games yesterday, as fun as it was as being a Brewer fan, it's like, I still think those were useless. You're going to play another game just to determine seeding? No, there's got to be a tiebreaker there in place. Season, you know, head-to-head, whatever you come up with. There's no need to play an extra game just to determine seeding. And if I were these teams, I would have saved my bullets. Like, I don't know if Colorado played it well. I don't know who you would consider their ace. But this kid they pitched yesterday, German Marquez. And
yeah.
If I'm mispronouncing the first name, I'm sorry. But German Marquez, this guy was throwing bullets down the stretch. I don't know if he was their ace or just their best pitcher. But he was. Here are his last six regular season games. Strikeouts. 11-11, 4-11, 11-13. The guy was throwing absolute bullets and was just crushing. And so they pitched him in that game yesterday. They lose. And now Colorado goes into this game tonight and they just burn their best pitcher. And this is why everyone who said you've got to empty the bucket to win that game yesterday, that's why I said no. No. tonight's the must win. You can lose yesterday and you still have tonight. You save your bullets. That's why I was so nervous about Hader yesterday. Like, they lose. Now you don't have that guy. And so what are you going to do? No, no, you save your bullets for this game. I think Colorado played that wrong. I think the Brewers played that wrong. I would not have pitched Hader those two winnings.
Okay, so what I like is the fact that somebody had to make a decision like that. That's what I like. So, because again, in baseball, more often than not, all you have to do is say, now we're going to rest him long haul, long haul, long haul. Which is why when you get to the postseason, none of them know what to do. Because all of a sudden, everything operates with a greater level of urgency and it flies in the face of everything that they do during the year. It's part of the thing I want to see with Cora now. Does he manage it the same way or is he doing it differently? Is Kimbrel coming in? Are the starters going to 115, 120? Like all of that. Now you've got to do it differently, and I like that. Just quickly, as a total aside, I think the kid going for Colorado tonight, I say kid Freeland, I think he's a guy that they got in a Tulowitzki deal with the Blue Jays. I want to double check, but like, I don't know. I get fascinated by that too. He's going against Lester. It's a guy they traded for. Like, and the Cubs? Lester. And I know people don't care about the National League here, but this could be one of the great gag jobs of all time by the Cubs.
They were up five games on Labor Day. They were up five games clearing the division on Labor Day.
And they were up one on the weekend, and they will have lost three or four if they get bounced tonight. Huge.
Don't gag on it, Joe. Joe, don't gag on it, buddy. Don't gag. All right, so this is where baseball gets good. Who has the most pressure on them this postseason across baseball? Tom Verducci did a list. It's interesting for our purposes. We'll get to that. And giving away Patriots tickets next.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
See, it's not that we map it up that way, you know. In a perfect world, it was Devensky and Harris and Giles. But all of a sudden, it didn't work out, and we went to plan B and C and D, and all of a sudden, Charlie's in the mound on game seven. But learned a lot. Learned that you have to rely on information. It's very important. It's not that it's scripted, but you have a pretty good idea which matchups you want to exploit and who's facing who in certain spots. So learned that from him and the organization.
So that was Alex Cora on his experience last year with the Astros.
Correct.
Couldn't figure out who he was talking about there, but he was talking about the Astros. And so they've already told Evaldi he's going game four?
Sounds that way. Which I'm not surprised by, given what we talked about yesterday with Eduardo Rodriguez.
Cora getting on Eddie Rodriguez by saying something like, you know, we're all just going to have to adjust to our roles and, you know, focus on them. Or whatever he said, it really implied that they told Eddie Rodriguez he's going to be a reliever. And so he's right. Got to suck it up and pitch well in relief.
Whatever the role is, we're going to need you.
Right. That's what Cora said about Rodriguez, which made it sound like they told him he's going to be in relief. So figure it out. So you go with Evaldi, whether it's the A's or the Yankees. How do you feel about that quickly?
So I like Evaldi better in the bullpen. I mean, if you're asking me how would I draw it up, and look, this isn't like a huge thing because I don't think the difference is that great, but I think Evaldi's stuff is better suited for the pen. I think Rodriguez is the better, more complete pitcher, which to me is a starter. And again, I tend to be locked into traditional ideas when it comes to this sort of thing. But Rodriguez throws three pitches. He's got two really good ones. The third can be spotty, but even so, overall, the stuff is better. He's left-handed. Like, I like the idea of having him in the rotation giving me six. That's what I like. And then Evaldi comes in and throws 98, and you hope the cutter's on. He gets you an inning or two, and then there you go. So, you know, that's the way I would go. I don't think this is, again, it's close. But to me, I think I'd rather have Rodriguez on the mound than Evaldi.
Patriots tickets coming up this segment. So don't leave your radio if you want free Patriots tickets. Tom Verducci, my buddy on Sports Illustrated, wrote a story. Here are 10 players, managers, and teams facing the most pressure this postseason. Number 10, Ryan Braun of the Brewers. He's hitting behind Yelich, and he's got a bad reputation, so he's number 10. Number 9, Nick Markakis of the Braves. Number 8, Brad Hand of the Indians. Big trade acquisition and looks like a real stud. Make no mistake about his stuff. It's nasty, writes Verducci. He says the pressure comes from being manager Terry Francona's most important piece in his bullpen. So it's now Hand is even more important than Andrew Miller?
Just because of the health factor, right? Miller's been kind of in and out of there all year, and I think the reason they got Hand is because they're going to lean on him more than Miller.
Number seven, most pressure, is Aaron Boone, manager of the Yankees. He's a rookie manager replacing a veteran in Joe Girardi, who brought his team to within one win of the World Series. Boone has a tricky wild card game to run. His toughest call is how quickly to pull his starter and make use of the team's greatest strength, the depth of its bullpen. He also has the defensive risk of Gary Sanchez behind the plate to consider. Boone has the greatest home run hitting team of all time, and the Yankees could bludgeon opponents with the long ball. But it's more likely that managerial decisions will come into play. So Aaron Boone, number seven.
He should be higher up on the list. My two cents. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
He should be higher up on the list. And look, and I'm delving into a different area here, but I think the New York media likes Boone and they're protecting him because he talks to them, he's accommodating, he's accessible, he's all of that crap. Boone should be in the top five. Aaron Boone's a big story this offseason. He should be in the top five. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No question. You're right, though. I agree with that. Joe Maddon is number six. Number five is Roberto Osuna of the Astros, suspended 75 games for violating the domestic violence policy. So he's got something to, well, I don't know. I don't know how that clears his name or whatever, but that's why Verducci has him at number five. Number four, the Boston Red Sox. Congratulations, he writes. Congratulations, you won 108 games, only one of 12 teams in history to win that many. But now you have to validate all those wins. Four of those previous 11 super teams did not win the World Series. The 06 Cubs, the 54 Indians, the 69 Orioles, and the 2001 Mariners. The minute you lose a home playoff game this postseason, it gets very uncomfortable. That is what happened when the 98 Yankees lost ALCS game number two to Cleveland, followed by a road loss in game three. But Orlando Hernandez rescued them with a gem in games four, winning 4-0 and putting the win back at their sails. Anyway, number four, the Boston Red Sox. Number three, Kenley Jensen, the closer there with the Dodgers, right?
Yep.
Number two, Giancarlo Stanton of the Yankees.
Another good one.
Among active players, only Kyle Seager has played in more games without reaching the postseason than Stanton, who gets his first crack at October in the AL wildcard game tomorrow night. Stanton posted a solid season in his first year in New York, but also whiffed a career-high 211 times. Stanton is a typically streaky power hitter who gets in trouble with his tendency to chase pitches. He struck out 127 times on pitches out of the zone. Nobody else in baseball had more than 106. If he stays disciplined with the strike zone, he's a game changer. Who has more pressure on him for the Yankees, Stanton or Boone?
Boone.
Agreed. Number one. Guess who number one is, Jim Murray?
Hey, everybody. Under pressure. Ding-da-da-ding-ding. Ding-ding-ding-ding-da-da-ding-ding. Under pressure.
Number one, David Price, Boston Red Sox. Listen to this. 86 pitchers have started at least 9 postseason games. Only one of them has never won a game.
Who would that be?
Who would that be, Jim?
Under pressure. Ding-da-da-ding-ding.
What a stat.
Oof. That is an unbelievable stat.
86 pitchers have started at least 9 postseason games. Only one has never won one of them. Price, who is 0-8 with a 5.74 ERA in those starts. He will get the ball in game two of the ALDS at Fenway Park with very little goodwill in the bank with Red Sox fans. Until his last two starts, tune-up games, really, so don't read too much into them, says Verducci. Price showed extraordinary command of his two-seam cutter combo on both sides of the plate, but he knows this game is personally important. He can write a whole new narrative by pitching well in game two.
True.
Price.
So to me, like, I think you could debate, though, and look, we're biased because we're in Boston, okay? But I think you could debate Price and Boone because the Yankees were in Game 7 of the LCS last year. And if the Yankees all of a sudden get spanked in the play-in game and go down the toilet, I look at Boone as being number one on that list or a candidate for it anyway. And, again, and I hate to go here, but Verducci's got a thing with Price. This goes back to that playoffs.
And nerds.
Right, you nerds and Dirk Hayhurst. And so, you know, Price, I mean, Verducci would love to put more pressure on Price. Now, that said, the numbers are what they are. So, like, and there are going to be a lot of people that have David Price number one on their list because of those numbers. And the fact is, if Price loses, it just keeps piling up, man.
Yeah, even with the bias,
he's right to have them one or two with Boone.
Sure.
I mean, if they go down 0-1.
It's Boone and Price.
Yeah, with Sale being dinged up, and if he gets, you know, if he gets ripped apart on Friday night, and now all the pressure's on Price, how's he performed in those positions before, postseason or not? And now it's a night game. The lights are the brightest. He has to go out there. He's thinking, oh, all the pressure's on me now. He's going to grip it too hard, and he's going to uncork a few, and the next thing you know, there goes a few out of the park, and it all goes away from him. Like, that's how I would expect it to go, based on the large sample size of how he's pitched in the postseason.
Patriots tickets coming up here in a minute. Who is the second most pressure on the Red Sox? Dombrowski.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure. Dombrowski. I was thinking uniform person. I was going to tell you J.D. Martinez has got some, too.
Yeah, for sure.
But Dombrowski's a good one. I mean, if that bullpen craps out, holy smokes. I mean, after everything Dombrowski's gone through in his career and to do nothing at the deadline, if the bullpen bites him in the ass, he's got nowhere to hide, man. I mean, that one's on him. There are no two ways about it. And look, again, that first game yesterday, and I know technically it's not a postseason game, but that's what you typically get in October from a successful team. The Brewers got the lead. They handed the ball to a dominant reliever, and he blew doors in the last two innings. So the Red Sox better find a way around that or they're in trouble.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones. We've given away the tickets. So thanks for trying. We have, right? Jimmy or
Yes,
Billy?
We have.
Okay, we have. I just want to make sure. So thank you for trying. Thank you for playing.
They're still going to call, though.
Right. Well, I'm just trying to save you some work. Better. So stop calling on the tickets. Please stop calling. We've given them away. Next game, we'll give away more. Simple as that. You can always stay tuned for that here. If you want to talk sports, by all means, 617-779-0985. Back to your phones. How about Dan and Ayer on the Patriots and Rob Gronkowski? Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, how's it going, Felger? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome. What do
you got? I know it's way, way too early, but I've been following this great Patriots team, you know, for the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And, you know, it's the same story every year. You know, they're in the playoffs. It's all going to be fine. So, you know, I'm kind of bored. It's early, so I just wanted to get ahead of the big, big story that's going to be breaking out in the offseason. Gronk is definitely going to be holding out. Don't you agree?
No. If he was going to hold out, he would have held out already. He's not. He's had his chances to hold out, and he hasn't done it. You know, next year, why would he do it next year? Next year is his last year under contract. All he has to do is survive that year, and he's a free agent. And, you know, he'll only be 31 when he hits free agency. I somehow in my mind feel like...
He's 35?
Yeah, closer to the end than that. So... this was the year to do it, when he had 2 years left and way underpaid and had some leverage, because without him, they would have been garbage. And so he really could have stuck it to him. The last year of your deal, just survive it, man. And then you're a free agent at 31 and you can cash. Like, so I don't know. I think if he was going to hold out, he's had chances to do it. He's never done it. He ain't going to start.
Do you think there's any risk of them moving on from him?
Yeah, sure.
And I don't mean a trade.
No,
I mean,
no.
Like-
I think Bill would do it at any moment. But now... hold on, let me amend that. Bill, yes. I don't think Brady and Robert will let it. And we now know that Brady and Robert actually run the team, not Bill. So, no, I guess it won't happen. And, you know, Gronkowski already said he's not going to play for any other quarterback, which I still don't buy. I can't believe, you know, that thing that Bert reported that, you know, the Rams are interested. Why wouldn't he want to go play for the Rams? Like, good quarterback, great team, great place to be Gronk and your brand and all of that. Like, I don't know if I fully believe it. When Gronk said he's threatened retirement, something tells me that was more about Detroit than playing for another quarterback. Call me crazy. Justin and Worcester on Sony Michel and the running backs. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, hi. I was just trying to talk about James White giving us a better chance, unless they're going to run Sony Michel east and west, because he's not a north-south runner. I don't get why Bill Belichick doesn't run their strengths versus their weaknesses.
So I disagree. It's the opposite on Michel. In my film study, which I'll get back to.
You're very proud of that, yeah.
The only stuff, I mean, it was like 2 minutes in front of the DVR, just fast-forwarding to his runs. But his best stuff was right up the gut behind James Devlin, north-south. That's where I liked Sony Michel. That's the only thing I like from Sony Michel in the game. There was actually something there to build on. When he goes east-west, unless he's got the entire half of the field like he had on a couple of those runs where no Dolphin was within 10 yards of him, that's when he gets into trouble. But to me, White is by far the more valuable player of this offense. It's not even close.
So, I mean, to me, I don't even debate it.
I mean, so look, run Michelle to preserve White. That's fine with me. I'm all about – White is the guy you got to protect, and that's the key to the offense, not Sony Michelle.
I mean, if you're down 4 minutes late in the game and you get the ball in your own 25-yard line, who do you want on the field?
Please.
That's not even close.
Not even debatable. Who has the most pressure on them in Major League Baseball? Joe in New Hampshire wants to weigh in on that list. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Mike. I had a couple of comments. One, I disagree with Maz about JD having the second most pressure. I think Sale has the second most pressure. I looked at the stat. JD Martinez, even though it's limited, he's done decent in the playoffs. Sale's done nothing in limited as well. And then as far as the list goes, I think Price is number one, but I think Stanton and Boone are like 1A and 1B. I think they have the most pressure on them as well.
Huge pressure on Boone especially. Girardi takes the same team to game 7 of the ALCS. Anything less than that and Boone has underachieved. His team's better than that team last year.
I mean, that's how I feel.
I mean, it's the same team plus Stanton, basically, right?
And Hap.
So, I mean, what's the excuse there? On Sale, doesn't he sort of have an out now with the injury?
Yes. So, like, that, which is why I didn't mention him, because I feel like with him now, there's an unknown there. And that is the health factor. We don't know what he's got left. So, to me, I look at the guys who performed beginning to end really without a blip. I mean, the other one is Betts. Like, if Betts has a horrible offseason, then, boy, that looks bad. I don't think he's gonna. Now, I'm not telling you I put him at the top of the list. But if he were to be bad in the postseason can hurt him more than it helps. How about that?
Let's grab Mike in New Hampshire on something we hit on earlier, that Titans and Colts game in overtime. Yes, Mike.
Yeah, so Felger, you keep bringing up this comparison of Frank Reich going for it on fourth down versus Mike Vrabel, and situationally they're not the same.
Mike, nothing's exactly the same, and I never said they were exactly the same, but there were some similarities. But anyway, go.
Well, similarities, but Mike Vrabel was down by 3 because the Eagles drove down and they kicked the field goal, and you know, if you don't go for it on fourth down, you're going to lose the game.
No, they could have kicked a field goal.
He could have kicked a field goal and settled for the tie, just like the Colts. That's where they are similar. They both could have settled for ties.
Right, but he was also in his in the opposing end, you know, on the other end of the field. The Colts game, he was in his own end of the field.
This is my point, that Vrabel could have lined up and kicked a field goal there a couple times on that last drive and just taken the tie. Instead, he went for the win. But they're not exactly the same. Nothing's exactly the same. But in that, they are similar. And what is odd is that Vrabel's being, you know, hailed here as a genius and a guy with brass balls and, you know, how aggressive and great that he is, when in some respects, he sort of made the same decision that Reich did. It's just his worked out. Because if the Titans don't push it in the end zone there and they run out of time or they fail on fourth down, you're saying, well, you could have just lined up there and kicked the field goal. You know, and I think one of the attempts would have been from 50, so it's, you know, no given for sure. But I'm just saying, it really, I mean, how you're assessing that is whether it succeeded or failed.
Yeah, to me, the I'd have gone for it in both cases. Now, again, I think in the case of Indianapolis, the play was there. I mean, it was a little tight, don't get me wrong.
Horrible throw.
But the receiver was there. He had a guy behind him, but he had position on him. If Luck puts the ball where it's supposed to go, they have the first down. I mean, he just whipped it at his feet. It was a horrible throw.
George and Newton on the baseball playoffs. Hi, George.
Hey, guys. I wanted to correct or straighten some things out with Tony. As a lifelong Cubs fan, the story really isn't Cubs choking as much as Brewers overachieving. The Cubs, going into the last week, had 7 games against the Pirates, who had the second-best record in the National League since the All-Star break, and the Cardinals were playing for playoff positioning, and they won 4 out of 7. At the same time, the Brewers swept 2 series. They swept the Cardinals, and
George,
then they got to play the lowly Tigers and swept them.
George,
so,
George.
Hats off to the Brew.
George. Then you have a home. Then you have a home tiebreaker game at home. Oh, I'm sorry, there's my Doug Marrone moment. You have a home playoff game against a Brewers team that I am going to go payroll on you. You have to have outspent by a bunch.
I would imagine.
Okay,
and then they're going to lose to Colorado.
And now Colorado's. So you're going to lose 2 straight home games when all you need is to win 1 to advance, and that's not a choke. Don't sell yourself short. That's going to be a tremendous gag if you don't. If you can't beat the Brewers or the Rockies in one of those 2 games to advance, I'm sorry. At home, you have gagged, sir. You have choked. on a chicken, a big one.
I mean, I'm not telling you it's the 2011 Red Sox, okay? I mean, that one's sort of on another level. But the Brewers did not even have a share of first place after July 12th. Okay, and the Cubs on the final weekend, all they have to do really is win 2 out of 4 games. They lost on Saturday. They lost yesterday. If they lose tonight, that is a choke. I'm sorry.
That's an easy one.
And they got Lester on the mound tonight. Like, you know, that's the guy they want in the big games, in theory, right? That's the guy they want. So, and they're going to lose to Colorado? Colorado at home? Please stop. The Rockies should never, ever be contend for anything.
Long commercial free segment is next. I'm going to give you a Bruins minute. They open up tomorrow night. They deserve a little bit of time. We'll get back to all your football and baseball calls as well, so don't go anywhere.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
My hopes are the players that played in the playoffs for the first time are certainly going to understand what it takes to continue to get round by round and ultimately get into the finals and win again. You know, our regular season last year was pretty impressive. I don't want us to look at our point total and how many wins. I want us to look at are we playing the way we want to play? Are we playing the way the coach would like us to play? Are we competing in a way that gives us chances to win every game? And are we getting better as the season progresses as we get into the playoffs? I mean, our division's very difficult, and there's a lot of good young players in our division. We're certainly not going to surprise anybody ourselves, so we've got to be ready to play at the drop of the puck.
Well, it's Cam Neely yesterday on expectations heading into the season. Bruins open tomorrow at the Capitals and go to Buffalo. So, 2 games in 2 nights to open up the season. Maz particularly had a thought on this Globe story today about, do the Bruins need to win now? About their window. With stars aging, do Bruins need to win now? They ask. How many more years will this core, Chara, Bergeron, David Krejci, Brad Marchand, and Tuukka Rask be the Bruins' central figures? Asks the Globe. Marchand is 30. That's scary, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Marchand is 30. Rask is 31. Krejci is 32. Bergeron is 33. David Backes is 34. And Halak is 33. Marchand, entering his 10th season, is the baby of that bunch. And then there was a quote here from Cam Neely that caught our eye. Cam Neely said, if you look at where our top two centermen are, how many years they've played and the miles they've put on, with Chara at 41... we want to give these guys an opportunity in the next 3 years to win a cup. So why did that strike you, that quote?
I just think because he's putting a number on it and giving you a relatively short window. Like, and when I say, you know, relatively short, like no championship window lasts a long time, but he's basically saying, no, we're going for it now. And that just caught my attention. I don't feel like they are quite championship caliber. I mean, they're getting there, but by the time some of these young guys fully develop, what's Bergeron going to look like at 36? Like, I just feel like, I don't know, they're caught a little in there. You know, they're in between a little bit.
Well, so I hate the rationale. I hate the players on that list. In other words, we have to, given the ages of our top two centers, we want to give these guys an opportunity in the next 3 years to win a cup. Like, let's win one for Krejci. We got to win one for David. Like, what are you, nuts? Krejci shouldn't even be here. Like, enough. Enough. He's the highest paid player, and he's underachieved the last 2-3 years, and the arrow's pointed down. So not only should you not be trying to win one for David, you should be trading his ass and getting younger and saving yourself some money. So I don't like that thought. And even Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron, they've won one. And even if they hadn't, I'm sorry, you run into real trouble if you try and win one for blank. There's only one Bruin in my lifetime who deserved that status and deserved it.
Bork.
Bork. They should have won one for Bork. Okay? That'll give you. Instead, Harry took him to arbitration, which, you know, remains one of the great embarrassments in organizational history. Right? So, but that's the only guy that you would say, all right, that's one. Win one for Bork. He deserves that. I don't put Chara on that list. I don't even put Bergeron on that list. And, oh, by the way, they've won one. So why? We're going to win one for Patrice? No. the more apt way to look at that is he's still really good. He's still a championship caliber player. Let's take advantage of it. You know, not you're not winning one for sentimentality. You're not winning one because Patrice deserves another cup. It's that if you can build around him, that's a championship caliber player who can lead you to the next cup. So that to me is, that would be the urgency. But they don't need to win it for those guys, especially Krejci. Good Lord.
Yeah, so again, the fact that they've won one already, like, I don't feel there's a sentimental part of it at all. I just feel like, well, which ones are going to be then? Like, they're still sort of, you know, integrating a lot of these young guys. Vaakanainen's the latest. Okay, so now maybe he's going to play because of what's going on with Krug and Grzelcyk's not ready. But you're talking about an 18-year-old kid who's never played in the league, let alone some of the other guys who are talking at center, whether it's, you know, Frederick, JFK. None of these guys have done anything in the league yet. They're not at a point where they have such a deep veteran core in the prime of its career that they say, well, we can integrate a young guy or two along the way and be contending for cups at the same time. They're not that far along. They're not at that development point. So that's why I was surprised by the comment. I thought, well, what's this here going to be then?
Well, so here's what I wonder, too. They've told you with their actions that they're not sold on some of these young guys playing big roles this year. Because, remember, they went after Ilya Kovalchuk in the offseason to play with Krejci. And, you know, they were saved from themselves, which I hated. I hated that idea of, you know, 35-year-old Ilya Kovalchuk on this team. But they went after him hard. They were saved for themselves because he got a 3-year deal. I don't even remember where he went. San Jose?
Out west. Yeah, I think it was San Jose.
Thought it was the Kings.
Somewhere out west. Maybe it was the Kings.
Yeah, it was the Kings.
Okay. And he got a 3-year deal. The Bruins weren't willing to go to 3, so thank God. They were saved for themselves. But if they fully believed in Heinen or fully believed in Donato or fully believed in, Bjork or, you know, some of these, you know, this next little wave of kids, would they have been in on Ilya Kovalchuk?
Probably not.
They were also in on John Tavares, and I think that's a little different. He's really a transformational sort of franchise pillar kind of player. You should be in on him if he's available to you, no matter what your roster looks like. But going after Ilya Kovalchuk to play with Krejci tells me they don't believe any of these guys are ready to play with Krejci. And someone is. Tomorrow night it's going to be Heinen or Donato or one of them. And
no, it sounds like it's going to be Heinen with Krejci on that line, and Donato's going to be on the third line.
Okay. With Corrales going to apparently move up and play on that third line center job, so that, you know, they've gotten younger, which is good, but yet they're going after Kovalchuk. So what are you doing?
Yeah, I feel like there's a straddling it a little. Like, I was surprised by the comment, you know, because again, when you say, you know, we'd like to win one in the next 3 years, it's like, whoa. So next 3 years. So like, you think you're right on the doorstep there then. Like, that's pretty close. And I just don't feel they're there. So, like, I don't know, maybe they get something big planned that we don't know about. You know, maybe this ties into Krug. I thought Krug would be gone by now. So now there's another injury involved, so maybe that screwed them up there a little bit or knocked them off course. I don't know. But I was, you know, when you start weighing it out, they are pinched a little on both ends here. Like, their young guys aren't quite there, and their older guys are starting to get along. See, like, when you said you saw Marchand's age and went, whoa, I saw Bergeron 33, and I went,
he's older than Krejci. I never, you know, I just don't view him that way. I feel like Bergeron's got so much more left in the tank as an elite guy. I feel like Krejci's almost cashed. Like, he's almost done.
Bergeron played at 18, didn't he?
Yeah, he was here at 18.
So
yeah,
he's been in the league 15 years.
Forever, yes.
Like, 15, that's a lot of miles. So, I don't know. I'm starting to worry that some of their older guys are going to start to slip. That's what's creeping into my head.
There's no question about it. And Chara, you know, I mean, that's begun. You know, you're there with him. It's just, how long can he hang on and be a serviceable defensive defenseman? So anyway, there's your Bruins minute. They open tomorrow night. We'll take your calls on the Bruins. We'll take your calls on the Red Sox and the baseball playoffs and any of your Patriots issues as well. We'll do that right after Murray's update, 90 seconds, no commercials. And also next hour, I want to give Bill Belichick credit for something he did today that I really liked. So I thought he did something today that was really nice, really classy. I'm glad he did it. I want to give him credit for that. We'll do that next hour as well with your calls. Again, no commercials here.
Michael Felger.